welcome to the Early Years Web Summit with me, Kathy Brodie of kathybrodie.com. In this summit, we're going to be exploring children's personal, social and emotional development and some strategies that underlie this key area of development. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by Wendy Baker. Wendy has worked in the early years sector for 25 years as a nursery practitioner, nursery manager and area manager, working both private and state sectors in nurseries and schools. She has three back-to-back outstanding Ofsted inspections, and I can't think of anyone else that's got that, so that's pretty amazing to her name. Wendy has done troubleshooting and crisis management and works now as a freelance early years consultant, offering a number of different training courses and consultancy services. Her courses are around children's well-being and mental health, and she has a real interest in anxiety. She runs a number of popular Facebook groups that are close to her heart. Welcome to the Early Years Web Summit, Wendy Baker.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
You're very welcome. Today we're going to be focusing on personal, social, emotional development. But the thing I really want to look at most is children's own identity and children's mental health and how that all fits into the personal, social, emotional development area. So let's start with children's identities, Wendy. Can you tell me a little more about what this means, please?
Yeah, well, I think it really means, Kathy, that how children see themselves and how other children see them. So thinking about how they are within themselves, how they value themselves, their self-esteem and their self-awareness. And obviously the child being that unique child, what makes that child them? And that's also in their culture, but, you know, it's also in their family as well. So not just about the oldest child or the youngest child, but how they are perceived within their family and also obviously within the settings as well. And it's really important that we know that, obviously, as key people. And also about how they talk about themselves and what they're proud of and how they're proud of their achievements and how they're building relationships and being part, obviously, of a bigger community and how they behave as well within that. And also about how learning about boundaries and also, you know, rules within society and how they obviously will behave, actually, within society as well. So I think it's really around that, to be honest, Kathy. But if I may talk about the adult's role in that, because obviously that's really important. It's about valuing, respecting a child, which is obviously absolutely paramount. And then also us being positive role models to set good examples to children so that children know that they feel valued and listened to. And, you know, that people are going to actually listen to what they're saying. Because, you know, it being a shy child, a child might pick up the courage to go, I'm going to go and say it to Wendy. And then Wendy might be, unfortunately, a little bit busy. And then there's a missed opportunity. And that child might not, you know, feel reassured and feel like, the confidence to go and speak to Wendy next time because she hasn't listened to her. And I think that's quite important in settings, especially when we're quite busy. As much as we try, it's really important that we try and do that with children. And then giving adults the opportunity to work with children about how they see themselves. So, you know, in small groups, talking about feelings and emotions and about their identity and how they see themselves as well. And we need to make sure that we're also being positive role models in our behaviour towards the children and also our adults and colleagues ourselves. So it's about praise and support and guiding and encouraging them, but also celebrating their achievements as well. And I'll just finish with, we know that the early years framework in the UK says that unique child, it talks about each child being unique and they should be resilient, capable, confident and self-assured.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that those few words cover an awful lot, don't they? But as you say, there's a massive role that us as practitioners can play in supporting that. So if we are thinking about mental health and children's mental health in our settings, how can we monitor children's mental health? What sort of things are we looking for when we're looking at that?
Well, first of all, Kathy, obviously children display all types of different behaviours. So it doesn't just mean that obviously a child's going to necessarily have a mental illness or mental health problems. So obviously in early years, obviously children, all types of different behaviour for different reasons. And like adults, obviously children experience anxiety at different times in their lives, which is normal, but it's about how we as adults support those children with those transitions. So for example, if a child's going off to school, you know, are we supporting them with like books, talking about their school, visits to the school, and then we're working in partnership with parents as well to support that. And it's about how we're dealing with that as adults, and then how those children's experiences will be, whether it be positive or negative, will also impact on their further kind of life outcomes to how they deal with their own emotions. So it's important to remember that mental health, unfortunately, is on the increase, or maybe we're also a great awareness, which is good. Two mental health charities are Young Minds, which do a hell of a lot of work with children and young people, and their mission is really about children's emotional well-being and mental health. And many years ago, I actually read a first article from Young Minds, and it talked about children as young as two actually being depressed. So that was really quite significant back then, and I think from then I've always had a bigger understanding and interest in children's well-being and mental health. And also, A Place to Be is another amazing charity that supports children in both primary and secondary schools. So through counselling of on one-to-ones, and also in small groups, and also working with the families. And if we look at the statistics, just two statistics I'm going to share with you, it's quite alarming actually. So 1 in 10 children from the ages of 5 to 16, that's 3 children in every classroom, has a mental health problem. And that's quite high. Yeah, it's high, isn't it?
Yeah, really is.
Really high. And this is from the basically the children's to be statistics, which will continue or may continue into their adulthood. So it doesn't mean they're all going to continue that. And then it also another startling statistic is mental health, basically before the age of 14, these children are, could be seeing significant mental health issues. Again, we're at the forefront of that, of early intervention in early years. So it's really important that we are very aware of children's well-being and mental health, so that obviously we can support them so that they get the right opportunities and services and can access those. So obviously that doesn't impact on their further learning and also their emotional well-being and also their outcomes as adults. And that's really important. So those statistics are quite high, but obviously with those charities, and now we know that the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge and Prince Harry are also looking at mental health, which is good because that will highlight and support mental health and give it a better, a better name, so we can help and
Absolutely.
support children and obviously people. And you said, how do we monitor it? Well, obviously we monitor that, Kathy, through obviously safeguarding, which is paramount in obviously the setting, and also the well-being of each child, and very much the effective key worker system. And I say that, because it's not just about keeping the records and settling in the children. It's about, do we really know our role and responsibilities? And I do sometimes see that in settings that sometimes key people don't, for some reasons they've got too many key children, they're under a lot of pressure, and I understand that. But it's about really, really knowing our role. And a big part of our role is about consistency and making sure that we're building secure attachments with those children. And what I kind of mean with that and by that is making sure children, some children don't have any consistency in their home lives. They might start off coming to nursery or the childminders in the morning. Time they've gone home, they might actually have moved house for other reasons. It happens. And lots of children obviously are living in really difficult and come from difficult, complex backgrounds as well. So it's ensuring that, the nursery or the childminder setting might be the only consistency that they actually see. So our role as a key person is absolutely vital about making sure they know each child individually. And it's not just about what they like and their preferences. It's their real little things, what upsets them, how they're going to react to things, how they deal with change. It's about really that rapport and being in tune with children, which absolutely is key. And it's also about supporting your key children. So if they are going through a difficult time, through changes, and also working in partnership with parents, so making sure that you're having those real kind of one-to-ones with parents, that you know what's going on and how you can support both the family but also the child through those difficulties as well. And I'd also say really good observations and documentation. And sometimes it's also not just written observations. It can be about, your key children, for example, when they might not be feeling well because they might be off their food. It's looking for those little significant changes and things in which what they're saying to you and how their behavior as well and how they're behaving within the setting. And as we know through observations, it's about those cohort sheets. Are they making significant progress? And if obviously a child isn't, what we need to do. And we know that Ofsted are looking for that, and making sure that how are we supporting those most vulnerable children to achieve progress, and making sure that we are supporting them to get the early intervention. So that's really important as well, Kathy.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point that you make about the families as well, that we don't always know what's going on. And certainly I've had conversations with people about homelessness, and we tend to think about that as sort of, living on the streets. But in fact, there might be families out there who are moving from friends to friends to friends because they don't have a home of their own for, a multitude of reasons. But unless you start to make those connections, you're never going to find that out. And that's going to have a significant effect on a child, as you say, if they don't even know where they're going back to when they're going to what they call home. I can't imagine what that would do to a child's mental health.
Definitely.
So that's really interesting. You have to make those real life connections. It's not just, as you say, it's not just the paperwork. You've got to dig a little bit deeper. So in practical terms then, what sort of top tips could you give for practitioners and educators to support children so that they do have that very good mental health and support them in their personal, social, emotional development?
Well, I think, Kathy, it really starts from a really good knowledge and understanding of child development and what that really means. So staff keep up to date with that. And also, attachment. What is attachment? What does it mean to have secure attachments with children? So we need to keep looking at that as practitioners and reflecting on that as well. And also an understanding of what is mental health and well-being. So making sure SENCOs and staff are going on training. And I know that there's a lot of training out there for schools, and there's just been obviously in the UK some more money that's going to be going into schools. So that's brilliant. But we also need it to filter down to early years as well,
Absolutely, yeah.
which is vital. And also, training in child trauma. And I'd like to actually mention an amazing expert in this, and I know she's on the Early Years Summit as well this year, Jane Evans. I've seen her talking as well, and she's an absolutely amazing expert in child trauma and also in anxiety. And she really talks that, in early years we need to be having training in trauma. I know back when I trained many years ago, trauma wasn't really spoken about. We might have a little bit about children's difficult circumstances, but that was really it. We didn't have a lot. So it's about also accessing, and there's lots of amazing websites out there. And please, look up Jane because she is amazing. And then the charities that I spoke about, they do significant work, and they also have access to training courses as well. But it's about your work with children. It's about how you foresee children as well. It's about those going back to that effective key worker system, really being in tune with your children, working in partnership with parents as well with the children, and also respecting them as well, and making sure that, children are making significant progress. And it's about effective leadership as well, so that managers and leaders are monitoring children and staff's progress and with their children's profiles, and making sure that if children are having significant lack in progress, then what are you actually doing about that? And you can talk about that in supervisions as well. But from a practical side, you can do things like and a well-being board in your kind of setting, so that supports parents about helping to raise awareness of children's well-being and things that they can do at home with their child as well. And also staff have got boards maybe in a staff room and access to information that they can look at things as well, because obviously staff's well-being is absolutely vital in this as well. And we need to be in a good place ourselves. And it's also about transition songs. I'm a great believer in this. Children need to make sure that they know what's happening next. We sometimes, best will in the world, adults need to know, but sometimes we forget with children that, oh, it's okay, they'll just go along with it. But we need to tell children what's happening next, what's going on, their settings are, their second homes. And it's important that they really kind of know what's going on. So visual boards and timetables, I'm really a great believer in those things. So going back to the transitional songs, about, cleaning your teeth, just helping, and it also supports children with ELA as well. And looking at your environment, definitely. I worked, my last setting was upstairs and downstairs. So children did a lot of transitions, and obviously that can have a big impact on their well-being and also their play and learning if
Yeah,
they
of
keep having
course.
to go up downstairs, and it's bad enough for us, but about a little child. So, we really looked at our environment and how we could change that. So, you know, making sure it's a calm environment as possible as it can be.
Yeah.
You know, nurseries are busy. But, you know, making sure that children have got security and consistency with that. And also the way in which we approach settling in of children and information that we're gathering, but building that rapport with not just the child, but the parents. So some things that we used to do was all about me box. So it's a little cardboard box and staff would just have significant things in there. So for example, my box was very much about kind of where I lived. So I came to nursery on a train and I lived in a flat and I had a cat. So you're sharing this with the key child and the parents. And so what actually happens is you're building that rapport up and you're developing that relationship up. And also parents hopefully will open up to you about things as well. And then we used to just finish with the key person, a little picture on the jam jar lids with them, and the key child could take that home with them. So they kind of then felt supported that they could then say, all right, I'm going to go and see Kathy tomorrow, and Kathy, you know, is going to be looking after me. And the parent can then talk to the child. So the transition obviously is a big thing going to nursery or childminders away from your family. Then they can support them in that way. But it's about us, obviously, as key people, really, really knowing our key children and being in tuned. And I can't really stress that enough. I mean, we do that a lot, but sometimes we need to remember those really significant things about children and how, you know, their behaviour is going to affect certain things, and sometimes how we're in tuned with their behaviour as well.
I think that's a really, really nice idea to have practitioners to have their own box. I mean, I've done it the other way where children bring in significant things, but yeah, of course, we should be sharing that and sending that home. And just on the point of sending a picture home, I know that I've worked in places and you know, maybe the parents aren't too sure of your name, maybe your name badge wasn't on when you first arrived, and then after about week three they're a bit embarrassed to say, oh, what's your name, and so it goes on. So making that exchange and just having pictures in the hallway, all those sorts of things, for parents make it so much easier to have those real genuine connections, doesn't it?
Definitely,
I think those boxes are a great idea. I wish I'd known that before.
No, they are very good, actually. Yeah.
Definitely. So have you got any examples of that sort of working, please?
Yeah, definitely. In my last setting, we worked with a child who came to us when he was two, and basically the family had quite significant issues. And as we got to know that family, and they became more apparent. So dad actually did have mental health issues. Some professionals had been involved, but it was quite a difficult situation. But we could see, you know, the child's key person and the Senko, and obviously myself, could see that there was real significant delay in his three prime areas, particularly communication and language, and also his personal social emotional development. So it was very withdrawn from the setting. He didn't like anybody to approach him. He didn't actually know how to do certain things. He didn't actually have any spoken words at all, even though his attention and listening was absolutely fine. So we had to work with him, and how we did that was we worked with the parents and parents' permission, and we worked with our local authority, and we also did what was formerly known as a CAF, a Common Assessment Framework, and we worked with other professionals from health, and obviously ourselves, and also the Senko team. To support his needs and the family's needs. And that went on for 2 years. But within that 2 years, we was able to actually support that child and that family. And that child did make significant progress. And that's fantastic. But it's very much his mental kind of stability. You know, he didn't have a relationship with his mum, which was really very sad. And she'd had postnatal depression and it'd not been diagnosed. So things like that. So we had to really support the family in kind of, you know, being a family and about attachment. And sometimes, you know, it's that whole bigger picture. And we know in early years that we obviously have to do that. But it's making sure that we're aware of that within early years, and we know that we're doing fantastic work. But we know that it's very, you know, we need to do more to make a real difference to each child.
So, I mean, if we do identify, we do our observations and we do identify that maybe there is something that's troubling, something's not quite right here, what would your advice be on the first steps? How would you then progress from that kind of little niggly feeling?
Well, obviously you would get your Senko to come down and also do observations as well, and then obviously share very much kind of what the Senko, your setting Senko has said, with obviously the key person, and then obviously speak to the parents and always seek parent permission, obviously. And then obviously you could obviously have a meeting with the parents, and either the parents could access their GP or their health visitor. And the two-year-old check is really significant here, obviously, as we know. And then also that you could also go to the local authority, and we went to our Senko team and they were able to help us. But we know there's lots of cuts going on, and it could be quite difficult. So it's really important that we make those strong links, and obviously with health as well. And with the two-year-old check and hopefully the integrated check, I'm in the UK, we're going to be seeing a lot more significance with that. I mean, I know the two-year-old check is really significant, and most certainly helped us identify, along with our observations, other children's needs, and also, you know, the cohort sheets where children were not making progress.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. So that was already having an effect, because in the UK, the two-year-old check's only really been around for a few years. But that's really interesting. And I think that's across the world, really, that at about age two, if things aren't developing or progressing, or if there's a plateau, then you can start to see that children have kind of either caught up or something's going on at age two. Yeah. That's interesting that the two-year-old progress check as a formal check in the UK is actually already having some effect. Yeah.
No, definitely.
That is so, so interesting. Fascinating ideas. There's some really, really good practical support ideas. So thank you very much for those. I know that you do some courses. Tell me a little bit about the courses that you do, Wendy.
Well, I do a course around actually children's mental health and well-being.
Right.
So we very much look at the children's rights, going back to the UN rights, and which obviously the UK obviously does. And also we very much look about what is children's well-being, and also look at attachment, and also look at our role as a key person, and, you know, identifying lots about anxiety and how we can support children. So very much similar things, a little bit more detail of what we've talked about today. And then also I do another training course around kind of babies and under twos. And we're very much looking at the attachment theory there, and our role, and a positive interaction. So I do training around those, Kathy.
Yeah. It's really good to hear that you actually do specific mental health. I know that in a lot of courses it's mentioned somewhere down the road, but to actually have a whole course about children's mental health, I think, is absolutely excellent. And as you say, unfortunately needed more and more. Or maybe we're just identifying it better. I'm on the fence on that at the moment.
Yes. But I know what you mean.
But it's really, really good to see that there is somewhere where you can go to get a course and actually learn all about that. It has been fascinating talking with you, Wendy. Thank you so, so much for joining us today. I'm going to go away and think about what I'm going to put in my practitioner's box.
Okay. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you, Wendy, for joining us on the earlier
Thank early you very summer. Much.
And thank you to our viewers and listeners for joining us today on the Early Years Web Summit about personal, social and emotional development.